So, ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, I would like to open our program. We're going to have our topic is broadcasting past, present, and future. And we have a delightful speaker. Her name is Andrea Darlis, and she is an Emmy-nominated, award-winning radio and television news anchor / reporter and talk show host. And she's based in Chicago. And in 2019, she was inducted into the prestigious WGN Radio Walk of Fame. So without any further ado, I am going to introduce Andrea Darlis for our presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Carla. Thank you so much. I'm so, so happy to be here. This is a wonderful event, and I'm going to tell you why. It's not only a pleasure, it's an honor. Just want to make sure everybody can hear me okay on Zoom and in the room. Everybody okay? Okay, very good. Very good. I'm going to be walking around the room too, because it's what I tend to do is pace and walk when I talk. So I will try to condense my remarks to the allotted time. I tend to be a little long-winded. So if at any point you have any questions on anything that I'm talking about, I'm going to give a nice little overview of broadcasting radio specifically, because that's my forte. And I know secretly, wink, wink, that's all of our favorite medium as well. 100%. I spent 30 years in radio. I started when I was very young in the crib, is what I like to say. Again, wink, wink. I want to tell you, first of all, though, why it is an honor for me to be here. In 2009, I was a reporter at WGN Radio here in Chicago, and that's 720 on your AM dial. Yep, I know we have a lot of radio fans here. Oh, I know. It was my home for 23 years and still is. I have lifelong friendships and partnerships. In 2009, so going a little bit back, I was sent to cover a story at Navy Pier, and it was a brand new attraction in Chicago. It was a hot air balloon that would soar up into the sky, and it was tethered. So you were able to ride it up to 14 passengers plus the operator, and they would go up on any given ride. And it was a limited attraction. It was only there for a couple of weeks, and passengers would be required to wear a harness attached to the gondola to prevent them from falling out. It was a 15-minute ride, and the ride would carry passengers 35 stories up into the air. Yeah, it was a simple story, or so I thought, one that I wasn't used to covering. You know, I was used to going to City Hall and covering city council meetings at the Daily Center or covering a trial at the courthouse. But this was a hot August day, and I was sent to cover this hot air balloon. And once I settled in, put my helmet on, we soared high above the city skyline. And I began to take notes and file my reports on what we called a tape recorder back in those days. And right. So when I went back to the radio station, I filed my stories. They aired. And I got a phone call in our newsroom from our landline. And it was a woman on the other end. She said, I thought this was someone pulling my leg and making fun. She said, I want to tell you how wonderful your report was from earlier today from that hot air balloon. And she was very serious. She said, the way I described the sun rising in between the buildings, the red and the yellow and the blue hues that surrounded the hot air balloon as the hot red and orange flames soared up through the balloon, making it fly across the bright blue skies and the white puffy clouds. She described this report back to me verbatim. And I said, why this report? Why did this strike you so? And she said, well, first of all, I'm a teacher. And she said, I'm blind. And I kind of welled up with tears a little bit. And I thought, wow, this story meant so much to this person just because of the way I described it. Just the beauty of it all. And that's why I really mean this speech and this keynote is so important to me. So when people say to me, what was the coolest story you ever covered? It's not a corruption trial. It's not a murder mystery or anything. It's that one. So for that reason, just a very quick little story there. Or maybe not so quick. Again, remember, I'm a little long-winded. So this is also why I was hired to do TV news at WGN TV in 2010. The news director said to me, I always hire radio reporters because they can describe a scene like no one else. Right? TV reporters, and this is no slam against, we have wonderful TV reporters in Chicago and across the country, but they rely very heavily on pictures. Radio reporters are trained to describe what they're seeing and covering for those who are in the car, at home, on their computers. So let me pop back just a little bit. I had my first radio job in 1991, and it was at a little radio station in Champaign, Urbana, on the campus of the University of Illinois. WPGU, Parade Ground Unit. It was a tribute to all of our soldiers who had fought in the war. Wonderful. Good memory. So I was a second semester freshman, and I knew I wanted to be on the radio more than anything in the world. So I auditioned for my college radio station. I trained for a semester and was told that year that I would be a DJ, and the shift was 3 to 6. And I thought, oh, this is great. 3 p.m. to 6 p.m., right? I could take my right? I could take my classes in the morning and then go head over to the radio station, which, by the way, was in the basement of a college dormitory. And the program director said, no, 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 no. They have 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. one day a week. And I called my mom back in Orland Park, Illinois, here in the south suburbs. And I told her, and she said, absolutely not. You are not going to do 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. walking in the dark. It was the 90s, so it wasn't like it was today, late 80s, I should say, too. But I quickly called the program director back, and I said, I'm in. And I took it. So that launched my radio career and my love for radio. And I had an opportunity at one point to do a television internship, and I said, no, I really want to stay in radio for the storytelling. You know, I call it visual storytelling, as you all would probably agree to that. So anyway, I moved on to a different radio station in Champaign, WLRW. And then post-college, I worked at a station in Joliet called WJOL. And that was in Joliet. Yep. And then in 1997, I moved up to WGN in Chicago. And I had been there ever since. Until 2019, I still freelance for them and some other stations in the market. WLS is another one. But now my full-time gig is working back for the University of Illinois, based in Chicago, trying to get the U of I as much publicity in Chicago as we can. But I want to talk a little bit first about radio in the past. And as you've kind of heard from some of my long-winded stories, small-town radio is all about making connections, learning how to write, learning how to tell the story. And I think you as teachers would agree with writing and background facts. That's the most important thing when you're learning to write, when you're taking English classes and communications classes. Being a reporter out on the street, you make connections and contacts, cover city council meetings and county boards and courts, visit police stations, reading police reports, making the news, and again, writing your own news, not outsourcing. And we're going to get to that when it comes to future news writing and future radio reporting in just a few minutes. Back in our day, as they say, and I am allowed to say that now because I turned 50 last year, so I can say back in our day, we would read on the air, on the radio, obituaries for those who couldn't read it in the paper. Remember? Yes. School closings. I know we're all probably of the age we can remember turning on the radio to see if our school was closed for the day, right? No matter if we lived in Chicago or Champaign or Spokane, Washington, wherever it might be, we would turn on the radio to find our information out, whether it's, again, school closings, emergency closings, weather-related emergencies, if tornadoes or storms or hurricanes even in Florida were coming your way. We had lunch with our contacts and visited local hospitals. There was a connection to the community and to city leaders. And I think radio reigned supreme. It was such a now medium. If something was happening, you wouldn't wait, say, perhaps on a television newscast till the end of your programming, Dallas or Falcon Crest or Melrose Place, whatever it would be, to wait for the 10 o'clock news. You would turn on your radio. And every market, every state, every city has their radio station, their go-to station. WGN was that for the Chicago area. I know PIX was that in New York. And all throughout the country, these radio stations were valuable sources of information. Shifting to radio in the present day, yes, it's better quality-wise. There's more content. There are pros and cons I think, to this. The pros, let's start with the positive. We have digital audio. Social media is through the roof. It's never been easier to get a story within seconds. Many of you have sitting right next to you, your phones. Radio did used to be more of a now medium. Now you can get anything on your tablet or laptop, whatever it might be, within seconds. The cons. Now with consolidation, this goes back to the jobs being outsourced. Very few radio stations go out and cover stories anymore. They'll just make a phone call. Not saying this is necessarily bad, but it eliminates that community connection. Stations use their TV counterparts to assist as well. They just don't have the big staff that they used to anymore. When I was working in Joliet, we had a staff of 6, which was huge at that point. When I moved to WGN, we had a staff of 12. I think now they have maybe 4 full-time reporters and everybody else is freelance or outsourced. You're hearing new voices, some not from the area, and that tends to show. I'm sure you can pick up on that. We have a town nearby, for those familiar, Des Plaines. Very familiar, very wonderful city, just northwest suburbs here in Chicago in the area. And I heard a reporter on one of the biggest news stations in Chicago, WBBM, last week. And I had to stop and I couldn't believe they called it Des Plaines. Like Tattoo, remember from Fantasy Island, Des Plaines, Des Plaines. He called it Des Plaines. And I thought, did I just mishear that? And sure enough, he finished out the story and said live from, you know, he said his name, Steve Smith, whatever the name was. From live from Des Plaines, and he said it again. I thought, wow, that's unfortunate that a lot of the reporters now from the area are not from here or from whatever city you might be in. And I wish that a lot of these news stations would hire from within. We have such a core, great group of reporters here from Illinois, as I'm sure all of your other states do too. So I hope going forward, many of them stay local. I think that's very important in a lot of ways. And if I'm speaking and anybody has anything that they want to add or say anything, please. Yes, I'm gonna stop and come on over to you, sir. Hi, sir. How are you?
Hi, Andrea. I'm Ray Campbell, president of the Illinois Council of the Blind. Listen to you for a long time. You know, oh my God. Well, I used to be on Website Wednesday nights on WGN, did a segment there. And my greatest friend of my whole, one of my best radio friends of my whole life, Orion Samuelson. Quick story, guys, if you don't mind. When I was growing up as a kid, when I was in third grade, I didn't go to school till later in the year because we were trying to get me into the Wisconsin School for the Blind. And I would sit and listen to the farm reports with Orion Samuelson, the price of live hogs at $50. But anyway, Andrea, I think one of the biggest downfalls of radio, you mentioned it, they've kind of taken the local out of local radio. Just this past Wednesday, I live in Springfield, and it was the end of an era. Jim Leach, WMAY, did his last broadcast. It's more taking the local out of local radio. A lot of the stuff now is syndicated, as you probably know, with all the especially conservative talk shows on, you know, that good or bad, and whatever your thoughts are. How do we get back to more of that local radio? And the other thing that drives me nuts about radio is you'll have a reporter say, or a broadcaster doing a talk show, say on WTMJ in Milwaukee. They're not in Milwaukee. They're wherever. How do we get back to that local radio? Is it about us consumers demanding more of that, or what?
Great. Thank you so much. It's a wonderful question. I really appreciate that. And we're going to have to take a picture afterwards and send that to Steve and Johnny. And you have that voice for radio. I'm sure you've been told. Does he, right? He's got that voice, that deep voice for radio. I think that's a
guidance counselors that said, you're blind. You can't do that.
Isn't that terrible? I had an English teacher in high school told me, she said, oh, I want to do something in journalism and be a writer. And she said, oh, you're not a good writer. She said, my writing wasn't sad enough. Can you believe that? Yeah. And I saw her years later and she said, oh, it was so good to see you. I hear you on WGN radio. She said, I always knew that you were going to be, I said, okay. And I don't want to give too much away, but her name was Mrs. Crab, and I'm not exaggerating. Yeah. So, but, you know, I shouldn't say that, because years later, you know, we broke bread and made our peace. And I said, you told me. She said, I know. But anyway, going back to your question, I do want to address this. And this is why I wanted to kind of break out here and ask for questions early on, because I want to have this discussion with you. I agree with you. And I think the short answer to that is yes, it is up to the consumers. This is your medium. Radio is everyone's medium. I'm going to give you a few stats before I finish up too. You know what? I'm going to give you those now because this is just way too important to talk about. I was going to end the program with radio in the future. And I get asked this question. I've been asked this question for years. Is radio going away? Is radio going to be obsolete? I've been in this business since 1991, 30 plus years. I'm not good at math, but I know it's over 30, right? Quick math. Is that right? Close enough anyway. Correct. But I don't think it's going away. No. And here's why. Listen to these stats. And I just pulled these stats. I had the Broadcast Museum pull these for me. This story was from 1 week ago, and it's called it's weekly United States reach. This is the percentage of the American public. When it comes to AM radio, 93% of adults over the age of 18 listen to AM radio still to this day. 93%. Now, those numbers go down a little bit, ages 18 to 34, it's down to 92. Strangely, 50 plus is 92. But listen to this, 95% of Americans between the ages of 35 and 50, 95% choose radio as where they get most or all of their information. So these stats are great. Now, just conversely, I'm going to give you the TV stats. 88%. I'm just going to do so I won't bog y'all down in stats, but 88% of adults over the age of 18 have television as their number one. Radio's 93, TV's 88. It continues to go down. Smartphone, again, this will surprise you, 83%. So a full 10 percentage point of people, or rather a few 10 percentage points lower than that, is where folks get their information on their smartphone. Then it continues to go down on their computer, laptop, PC, 50%, tablet, 37%. So just this alone is why I don't think radio is going away. And I'm going to give this link to Carla too, so you can read up on some of these other stats. I just found that fascinating. It says AM radio is America's top reach medium, giving it mass appeal among diverse audiences across generations, ethnicities, and demographics. So I don't think radio is going away. They've been saying this for years. This is not going to go away. I'm going to step over here and have...
We have a hand raised in Zoom.
Okay, should we do the Zoom first, Carla? Do you want to do the Zoom? Yeah, we'll do a Zoom, and then we'll go to you, young man.
Phil, go ahead.
Morning, Carla, and good morning, Andrea. This is Phil Jones coming to you from Atlanta, Georgia. You're talking about the old days. I can say that too, because I was in radio for 43 years, and I can tell you when I started in college radio, as you did, and in those days, radio stations, whether it didn't matter what kind of radio station you had. They always had news departments. I mean, it can be as many as 5 to 6 people. It was just so much local news coverage, and it's amazing here now. Just a few years ago, I was up a good part of the night one night listening to WSB radio. Although it wasn't the radio coverage, it was simulcasting WSB TV, and that just showed you how much things have changed. But how do you feel about I've always thought that the internet is going to really save radio. Radio is not going away. But how do you feel about the internet and what role it plays in radio and keeping it around?
That's a great question, Phil. Thank you so much for that. Atlanta, quick story. We have friends who live in Atlanta. And when I was on WGN, they said we could hear your signal all the way down right by Hartsfield. So cheers to you and everybody out there in the Atlanta area. Thank you for the question. I do agree with you. I think the internet is going to help radio, because think of all of the streaming sources. When I'm home and I'm listening, I am going to put on my laptop just because I'm working on it. I'm going to stream it. I think that actually will help. And especially for farming communities, rural communities, you know, I think when they can't get signals out where they need to be, they will continue to. So I don't think it's going away. And I think the internet will continue to help radio. Here, why don't I get to you, young man?
Okay. So my name is Xander. I'm actually probably one of the youngest folks in the room. I'm 18 from West Virginia. But even me being as relatively young as I am, I listen to AM radio. I love getting my news from 58 WCHS. DXing is a great thing. I relatively often get Canadian stations at night. And I don't think AM radio, the challenge from vehicle makers we've been hearing about lately, could potentially be an issue, but FM radio, television, the internet have all come out, and yet AM radio remains on top in several areas. Even in New York City, I saw recently top the ratings. The only real issue I see is conglomerates owning stations, companies like Odyssey or iHeart. Local broadcasters, they're either getting bought up or there's so many frequencies allotted to things like the Educational Media Foundation, KLOV, Air One, etc. Local radio doesn't have the space to flourish anymore. And it's really sad because you find good local radio stations like 88.1 WTSQ Charleston, and it's just so amazing. But I don't think radio is going anywhere. I think it's here to stay for the foreseeable future, and it's a great thing.
Thank you, Xander. Thank you so much, Xander. And that's a young person's perspective, which I think is absolutely wonderful. You mentioned these conglomerations. You're absolutely right. In Chicago, there's the Cumulus Media Group, which, Phil, that's I know in Atlanta, they're based there too. Is Cumulus, and they own WLS, AM, FM, Odyssey. That's another group. Hubbard, iHeart. You're right. A lot of these are merging together, and that I again, pros and cons, but if one station wants to, or if one group wants to feed more money back into it, that could only be beneficial. And this is an instance where I think staffs, plural, can help one another. For example, Cumulus owns WLS, AM, FM, and Q101. It's an alternative rock station. And if someone can't work one shift on one station, they move to the other, which that is good too, because that keeps all three radio stations, which are in the same building and on the same floor, kind of under one roof, but still flourishing. I believe in the 21st century, especially now, AM is more dependable for so many reasons. It's been used to broadcast emergency information, especially people, as we mentioned, in rural and developing areas, to get news, weather, and urgent information. I'm going to step over here and take a couple more questions. I see a lot of hands up in the room, so I'm just going to start over here on the right, and I am going to give you, hey, young lady, how are you?
Diane, I'm good. Yes,
I'm going to give you this microphone for your question. There you go.
Okay. Thank you. I guess I have more of a comment than a question. I live in the Detroit area, and we have WJR, and they have been making a big deal. The guy that did their morning show has left the morning show to do an interview show called Focus. That's on for a couple hours in the afternoon, and they're making a big deal out of the fact that they removed a syndicated talk show to put him on this Focus program, and that they are, you know, it sounds like they're taking a large step to return their station to local broadcasting.
Good. Thank you. Thank you so much, Diane. That's a great comment and question. Detroit is a wonderful market. There are 6,000 AM radio stations across the country. And honestly, folks, I don't think that is going to go away at all. I'm going to make my way around to your table. Hello, Donald. How are you? There you go.
Good. Thank you.
I'm gonna hand it to you.
You've been talking about commercial radio primarily.
Yes.
The young man talking about 88.1, you get down to the bottom of the frequency and you're in the NCE, non-commercial educational. And that's where your public radio and your community radio stations are. Now, if you want to get close to home, those are the stations that are going to help you do that. And they are out there in the community. Lots of them are volunteer stations and they're volunteer radio hosts. So watch down at that end of your FM dial. But there's also a lot of public radio stations on AM as well, too, are fighting the trends. They're not conglomerating across the country and putting all of their resources in one corporation, as has happened so much in the commercial radio hours.
Thank you, Donald. You know, and I'm glad you brought that up too. And I do want to address the elephant in the room, is that some of the car manufacturers have removed AM receivers from their electric vehicles. They are claiming that they interfere with the electric engines. But here's one more stand for you, and you're going to love this one. The number one listening location for radio, number one listening location, any guess? In the car. Absolutely. So Ford is already taking steps to reverse that trend. And I think you're going to continue to see that as well. I'm going to walk around the room and get a few more of your comments. Hi, you're right here. Here you go. You can grab that microphone. There you go.
Of course. First of all, I just want to say that I do love WGN. Sorry, I'm going to cry.
Oh, no.
It just breaks my heart, you know, that, you know, a lot of these, you know, radio program, these radio stations are, you know, like just becoming just less and less local, you know. And I mean, like the sports, you know, I love listening to hockey, you know, like John and Troy on WGN, you know, they do such a great job, you know, describing the hockey games, you know, and like, what's going on, you know, when somebody, you know, gets a goal. And it's just, I don't want that to go away. And like, not only that, but like the news, like that's so important, just everything. And I'm wondering like how, you know, for those of us, you know, that aren't directly like involved, you know, like if, you know, like for us, you know, that are listeners, what can we do to help, like to make sure that this doesn't happen, like that radio doesn't get taken over by, I don't know what the proper term is, but
it doesn't become obsolete, basically.
Right. Like what's that, we have local radio, just how can we get involved in this? Thank you.
That's a wonderful question. And you bring up some great, I heard my first hockey game with my dad. My parents had season tickets and they went on their first date. My dad passed away many years ago, but they went on their first date to a hockey game. And I first heard hockey on the radio and I thought, this is so cool. And, you know, we were all young when we first had our first sports experience. We're hearing baseball on the radio and hockey on the radio. And it is wonderful. I agree with you 100%. It's wonderful.
Like I've never actually attended a Chicago Blackhawks game, but I mean, hopefully I'll be able to do that someday, but Just listening, you know, to the radio when the Chicago Blackhawks are playing and, you know, they're on WGN, it's almost like you're there, you know, it is.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are running up against the clock. So I'm going to ask that when you do questions, you know, make it as brief, try not to do as much commentary. And we need to take a hand from Zoom next, but I'm going to let Andrea.
I'm going to just real quick respond to that. Okay, what can
and
we
we'll
do?
Take our next one will be from Zoom.
Okay, we'll do a real quick an answer to you. And then the Zoom, we'll go to Zoom. I agree with you. I think keeping your voices heard, it is what's going to be most important. Either talking to these radio stations, let's talk to lobbyists, let's talk to those who are, you know, enforcing laws in Springfield, whether that be getting a group together, a coalition together, but keep making your voices heard, because station managers hear you. You know, the program director at WGN Radio here locally and WLS Radio, I know them and have gone, you know, grown up. We've all worked together for many years. They want to hear from you. So I would absolutely keep the dialogue open, keep your voices loud and heard, because there's nothing more than they want to do is keep it live and local too. That's what we hear day in and day out, live and local. So they want to keep that alive too. I think the real fight is going to be the federal lawmakers, you know, in Washington, D.C., because they're always trying to slash budgets and see how they can save money. But I think keeping the dialogue and the discussion open and keeping your voices heard is what is going to help. Is that a good? Okay.
Tabitha?
Let's take a question.
Good morning. Go ahead.
Thank you. So one of the things that those of us who can't be with you all in person miss are the tours. And we would love it if you could give us a bit of a virtual tour or description of what would we find at the Museum of Broadcasting.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks. I'm glad you brought up the Museum of Broadcasting as well. Now here, so there's a little caveat to this discussion. I'm going to hold on 1 second while I
pull up some stats for my laptop. I'm a stat person too sometimes. But I think it drives the message home.
So the Museum of Broadcast Communications, it's located at 360 North State. It was founded in 1982 by a man named Bruce Dumont, who I know many of you know, Bruce. And Bruce made it a mission to preserve the archives and the legacy of several of these stations that lack the space or resources to save these materials. And yes, I am talking about carts and reel-to-reels and cassette tapes and CDs and mini CDs. And Bruce knew that these materials would be valuable and understanding the history of radio and television. So the building opened to the public in 1987 in River City in the South Loop. In 1992, that's when we moved to 360 North State, which is next to House of Blues, kind of in a crowded downtown area. Unfortunately, COVID really changed everything and a lot of things. I'm sure you've heard as you know, your conference has gone on. But we were not able to maintain that space because of COVID. We were getting no visitors to the museum. And at that point, had just elected a new board. I joined the board along with Dave Plyer, a man named Ed Ramsey, who's at DePaul University now. And we really are trying to, and there's a man named Craig Kitchen and Dennis Green. You probably know these names, Craig Kitchen and Dennis Green from New York, who are involved with the Radio Hall of Fame. And we've really tried to make it our mission to, now that that space is no longer viable, we had to move out of that space. So all the archives and everything was packed up. It's packed up and ready. It's on the move. It's ready to be moved. We just need to find a brick and mortar space for that. But in the interim, I think to your point, to your question, we're going to have much more of an online digital presence. You know, so you'll be able to learn more about the museum online while it's in this digital space before it actually goes to a brick and mortar. And the brick and mortar, I believe, will be somewhere in Chicago, whether it's the South Loop or the North Side. But the space itself was big for a downtown space, but small when it comes to a museum. So I think this could only benefit the museum by finding a bigger space to house all of these archives, many of which are radio too. And I also have to give a quick plug into the University of Illinois is starting a radio archives program as well. So you'll be able to hear your Orion Samuelsons and all these broadcasters, these pivotal broadcasters who have spent decades in this career. So look for that too, as the year goes on and probably into 2024, where you're going to see more of these digital archives as well. That answered your question. I'll walk around the room here.
Could you give the website that people could go to? Because
I'm sorry. Yes, it's very simple. Museum.tv. Museum.tv. Okay.
Okay. Hi, Naomi. And I've worked in commercial radio, worked in community radio, and now I'm on a non-com show. Yes, we're a team. And anyway, so as a blind person, it was really hard because I had a station manager tell me, I'd give you the music director job if you weren't blind. Oh, yeah, that was...
Let me tell you.
Oh yeah, but and so anyway, my pet peeve right now is TV news.
Oh yeah,
and it just okay. We watch, you know, we're from St. Louis, and so I mean, it's awful. I mean, you can count the mistakes that people make, and I'm really curious about the quality of J schools, because when we worked in radio, we had a news person that was in J school, and the salespeople would sit up and listen and in the morning and count all the mistakes she made. So, yes, pet peeve.
I completely agree with you. And shout out to Mizzou, because that's a great J school's journalism school. For those, the J school. Yeah. So Missouri has a great school, University of Illinois. I think it literally goes back to, and U of I is trying to do a lot of this, is hire former reporters. I try to speak to as many classes as I can to reiterate the writing. And that's the most important thing. But I have I agree with you. I have seen that as well. I saw on Instagram the other day, there was a shooting on Juneteenth in Willowbrook here. And there was a group who had gathered in a parking lot, and I think 20 people were shot. So the report read, this is how it read verbatim on Instagram. It said 22 people shot, one dead, 21 not dead. Not dead.
We have a hand raised in Zoom.
And this is from a major television station in Chicago. And I thought, do I say something and sound like the curmudgeon in the room? But you're right. It all goes back to these schools need to teach young people writing. That's key. You know, not just writing to pictures, writing to just, yes, to write to plane.
Right.
I know you, did you have a question as well?
Well, we have a hand raised in Zoom.
Ladies and gentlemen, I hate to be the old meanie timekeeper here, but we have time for one and very brief. No,
we have a hand raised in Zoom, Carla.
Wrap it up because some of us are going on a tour.
Oh, okay. And I want to invite all of you too, before we get this last question, whenever you assemble again or gather, we would love to have you at WLS or WGN to see. Right. We can maybe do both in one day. So future thought, I'll just put that out there and get Terry's question.
Carla, we have a hand raised in Zoom.
You were talking earlier about the reporter saying the plane. You know, how much mentoring is being done in newsrooms in both radio and television? Does that go on where you would say to the reporter, no? Sorry, you need to say this right. It's Des Plaine.
Right. That's an excellent question. We used to have interns, and most of us know internships, right? You know that internships. I had several going through school and out of school as well. The Illinois legislature in mid-2000s, this is pre-COVID, but they shut that down. Basically saying, and this is where I thought it was invaluable for these young people and these young students to learn how to write and learn their craft of radio. But they said that you can't have interns anymore because it would be unpaid labor. So they would not let them do that. Paid them. So of course, you know what the big bosses of the radio station are saying, oh, we're not going to pay someone. Exactly. We're not going to pay someone to do that. However, now post COVID, some radio stations are allowing internships again, which I think that's very important. That's where it's based, you know, having KMOX, of course, and saying,
okay, ladies internships. And gentlemen,
I'm sorry, I was a little long winded, but I'll be out around if anybody has any other questions.
And I just want to thank everybody. And again, I could listen to her all day long.
It's my honor.
I want to thank her.
It's my pleasure.
Get to all your questions. I wish Father Time or Mother Time, whoever it is, isn't so mean, but I can't get him to stop. So I just want to thank you, and I want to thank Andrea. I want to thank our streamers. I want to thank everybody. And ladies and gentlemen, turn your radio on and keep listening and stay tuned for bigger and better things. Thank you very much.